Hello and welcome back to the Hulkcast. As usual, I'm James Rushton and over there is Danny Raza. Each week we go through the latest news and results in the world of Aston Villa and we follow up on everything that's been going on there. Aston Villa actually got their second win under Dean Smith as head coach. They beat Bolton by 2-0. And how do you feel about that, Danny?
A lot of positives to see from that, to be honest. There was quite a few things that I picked up in there which I was very happy about. Obviously, we know that it was going to be difficult for Dean Smith to get that second win. But the thing is, Villa have been playing well. We know that even in those games that we've struggled to get a result, Villa have been playing well. It's not been the same sort of situation or the same sort of frustration as we would have had not getting results under Steve Bruce with the poor style of football, or I think that's unfair, or with the more unattractive style of football, shall we say, that we were seeing under him. So it is good to see that pretty passing style of Dean Smith finally come off.
Yeah, I think it's all slightly coming together. I wouldn't say it's fully coming together, but I think we've seen a lot of positives and certainly a lot of things to move forward. Also, interestingly, I think we're also seeing a fair bit of confusion, some mistakes, and in a way that's good because it's stuff for us to iron out and get even better and not become complacent. I guess I think what we all want to see is Villa actually build each game, and we're seeing that, which is good. Those losses, looking back on them, I guess you can say learning curve for Villa. Then they're looking almost like, I wouldn't say they're a finished product right now, mate.
Yeah,
they're looking good.
No, absolutely, absolutely. But and again, we're relying on a lot of those first teamers to play every single game, and I think that is a problem. I think it is an issue. I don't think we've seen much change in the lineup over the last few weeks. So, you know, this whole thing about confusion, this whole thing, you know, part of it could be tired legs. You know, we're seeing the same guys out there every single week, and they're bound to make errors to some degree. And I just wonder, you know, whether the wheels will fall off if there comes a point where a couple of them get injured. I think what we're going to start to see now with Dean Smith in the next couple of weeks is, you know, try to work a few more players into that team. I think he's been nervous to kind of remove some of the cogs, and it's easy to see why. There is a lot of confusion in that team. There is a lot of sort of hang on a minute, what are we supposed to be doing moments? And I think it is to do with the fact that we're effectively changing to a fully new system.
Of course, Jack Grealish got his goal, didn't he? Straight away off the bat in a move that Dean Smith and the player himself said it was rehearsed. It was a move they've been working on. That's so good. To me, mate, that's so good that they've been planning something like that.
Right. Do you want me to watch this goal and commentate over it? Not commentate, but I'll tell
you what's
happening.
Yeah, happily.
Okay, so let's find this. So what we see is a breakaway on the right-hand side. I think that's Albert Adoma. Alan Hutton's kind of got the ball over there. Jack Grealish is actually... Now, what we're seeing is Tammy Abraham's dropped back. He's dropped back to collect that ball from Alan Hutton. But all this while, the Bolton Wanderers defenders are watching Tammy Abraham. Jack Grealish, meanwhile, has done something effectively that we haven't seen from his number 10 position under Steve Bruce. He's always kind of sat back just a little bit and kind of had an emphasis of staying outside the box, but he's actually done something more a supporting striker would do, and he's gotten ahead of the defense. So Tammy Abraham's now basically sliced that ball through the defense for Jack Grealish to finish. So that is quite interesting there, because are we now seeing a change in Jack Grealish's role as a number 10? Is he playing more as a support striker than as another midfielder, so to speak? That is the question that I would have after that goal.
It makes sense. I think both the manager, well, the head coach and Grealish said that not only had they been working on that, it's that they don't want Jack Grealish to get involved in midfield battles. They want him to stay advanced.
Right.
And we've seen that from Grealish, haven't we?
Because what's the point? What's the point of him getting involved in midfield battles? As much as he can be tenacious, and as much as we have seen him win the ball back before, that's not his area of strength. He gets chopped down. So effectively, if you're working on Jack Grealish's positioning, if you're working on Jack Grealish's positioning off the ball, that almost takes away the element of defenders trying to rattle him because they're not paying attention to him.
And they clearly weren't against Bolton, mate. I think it was really good just to see him score. But also, he grabbed an assist late on as well, crossing in for James Chester. And I said to my stepbrother, who I was standing next to, I said, oh, please don't let anyone except Conor Hourihan take these free kicks, because he's been putting them on. He's been putting them on a plate for people. I'll say that. He's been putting them on a damn plate for people.
Yeah, he's great.
I didn't want to see it. I don't want to see John McGinn take them off him. I don't want to see Jack Grealish take them off him because he's doing well. Jack Grealish took it off him, put it on James Chester's head, and it's a goal.
I'm pretty sure he didn't.
You're pretty sure. I got that wrong.
Jack Grealish got fouled. He got fouled for the free kick.
He got fouled for the free kick.
Yeah, Jack Grealish got fouled for the free kick. So I suppose defenders are still mashing him about for no particular reason. But yeah, he got tumbled to the ground, you know, obviously from behind.
He got the assist. No, it was him.
No, it was. It wasn't. It was a left footed free kick.
Yeah, and it's got Jack Grealish assist on it.
No, you know what? You know what? It was the disallowed goal that I'm watching. Which was also a fantastic finish from James Chester, in all fairness.
Was that Conor Hourihan putting that
was
on
that it? Was Conor Hourihan. So you know, I think both of them are effective free kick takers. I think that's the conclusion that I've come to over here.
What we found out is that Villa have an array of fantastic set piece deliveries, and also that James Chester will put them in.
I felt like the ghost of Martin Larsson had come back to help Villa in this hard time.
No, that's not the first time Chester scored. And mate, I know who scored ratings. They don't count for nothing. Do you know the numbers? 7.4.
Yeah, yeah,
9.8.
Yeah,
yeah. They don't count for anything. James Chester has got a 9.9.
Well,
and I don't think I've seen something like that on there.
You talk about his goal, James. You talk about the header and the disallowed goal. Both of them, obviously, fantastic work from him inside the box, and you know, the positioning wise, the alertness of a striker. But speaking of alertness, what about that clearance off the line? That really is what earned him that man of the match. It was a plum cross from Bolton Wanderers. Neil Taylor not watching his man. And Taylor's just come, Chester's just come in as the ball is being headed past Nyland, and he's basically overhead kicked it.
Yeah, and what I really liked about it, it wasn't reactions, mate. It wasn't like reaction or, you know, last gasp. It looked like he knew what he was doing the entire time and just watched it unfold.
No, because the angle that he'd hit it at, you know, 1 inch off, and that's going in the back of the net. Because he's coming towards the ball, you see. Right, so he's managed to basically get his foot under it and whack it in the other direction, and it's just sublime defending.
It's so planned. It's so calm. It's not like this amazing thing that's happened in the heat of the moment. It just looks like that's what was always going to happen. He knew it.
The thing about centre backs, James. The thing about a good centre back is his instinct, isn't it?
Discipline, instinct,
and he had the instinct for that.
It all folds into James Chester, and he hasn't had the best season so far, but he's getting so much better, and that's all we ask, is that these players, they set the bar high and they carry on setting the standard and they carry on moving forward, and he's doing that each week now.
Doesn't it worry you though? Doesn't it worry you that we're relying on him?
That's what he's there for.
Chester's out that defence and we're out.
Yeah, I know, but look, I don't know what to say, because, you know, when you rely on him and he falls apart, how long has he not? He's been ever present, mate. He's been ever present.
He needs a rest. He needs a break, man. He's been playing in every single, I know he's had like the odd game off for like suspension or injury or whatever, but he's been playing basically every single week for us for like 2 or 3 years.
Yeah.
Hasn't he? So, you know, he's the fact that he's still putting it on, the fact that he's still able to put in, you know, captain like performances, fair play to him.
And the problem is,
honestly,
you can't rest him. You can't. You know, we're in that position now where he is undroppable. Any other player, mate, I'd be fine with resting. Not you can't.
But and when was the last time we had a defender like that? Because we've had years and years of defenders who have been liabilities and have basically been out of the team for 2 years. I'd go as far as saying even Richard Dunn, man, he was good, but there was always times where you just couldn't rely on him. You know, it's been years since we've had a proper sort of, yep, he's our best defender guy on the pitch. Do you not think so?
As much as I adore Olof Malberg and I love Martin Larsson, but they were in some bad teams, mate. And sometimes in those bad teams, they didn't look good.
No, but Melberg and Larsson were both able to hold their own. I mean, Larsson didn't stay there for a long time, but Melberg did have that position to himself for years, though, didn't he? I'd say he was
and the Chester's
last one.
Looking like that. Chester's, and yeah, it's the goal yeah, scoring as well. He's got three goals already, and he could have had four. That would, if that offside goal had been flagged, and it wasn't flagged, sorry, he'd be our third highest scorer, equal with Abraham and Kodja.
Well, good, because otherwise, you know, we don't actually have any other set piece threats other than Tammy Abraham.
Yeah, and an odd time of Jonathan Kodja. But no, we're seeing goals come across the park now. And I really hope that Tammy Abraham can keep leading from the front. And what's more, I hope that Grealish can continue build on that goal and keep adding, because he looked the real deal. James Chester looked the real deal. Our key players stepped up and won that match for us. And I am pleasantly surprised by that.
You know, the thing with Jack Grealish is that he gets a lot of criticism because he doesn't score enough goals. And I'd say it's a fair criticism of his game. Absolutely, it's a fair criticism of his game. If you're playing as effectively the even assists as well. If you're playing effectively as the main playmaker in that team, where's your goal tally? Why aren't you able to score from free kicks? Why aren't you able to shoot from distance? I think we've been seeing Jack Grealish try to do a lot of that, but it hasn't really come off for him this season. But that finish that he placed yesterday was great. Because, as you say, it was planned, and it seemed controlled. It seemed like he knew what he was doing. Whereas a lot of the time when we have seen Jack Grealish in the past try from a lot of these efforts, they've almost seemed out of desperation.
Yeah, I'm trying too hard.
And I don't know whether it's a difference in that.
I think you're right. I think you're completely right. I think it's a case of trying too hard, and it's ironic that the one planned move where he doesn't have to drag the team, the one planned move, it results in him scoring a really good goal. It wasn't relying on, you know, instinct or ability at all. It was relying on the coaching, the training, and the trust to pull off that move.
I mean, it was absolutely relying on ability.
Definitely,
to finish that.
Definitely. When it comes to that,
it was a tight angle.
The chance, it's the best chance I think we've seen him have this season, and it was manufactured, and that's really good.
Mm.
I'm really proud of that, and I don't think we'll see. I really hope he scores a better goal than that, mate. I don't think. But it's like John McGinn. John McGinn scores that amazing goal, and you think that's him done for the season. I really hope Jack Grealish got another one like that in him. Not some tap-ins. I want to see some stuff like that, mate.
Yeah, I want to see more like that. I think that'll work off the ball, though. I think that's important. You know, that positioning, because I've always seen Jack Grealish as the guy to drop deep and, you know, pick up the ball from you know, halfway in the opposition's area. If we start seeing him add that to his game now, you know, the ability to get past defenders, without the ball, to the ability to get in behind, that could be very interesting. That could be the key in his game to take him to the next level.
Of course, yeah, the ability to step up, move forward, and get beyond the striker without the ball at his feet. It's that positioning, that intelligence that he needs to work into his game. And it's getting there. The coaching's rubbing off on him this quickly, this early. So, pleasantly surprised by that. And Bolton, for all intents and purposes, mate, they did not look good. I mean, you say what they want about having a goal cleared off the line, but it weren't ever going in.
No, but I don't think Bolton ever do well against Villa at Villa Park. I think every time I've gone to see Villa play Bolton, we've seemed to do well against them. But it's not the same Bolton Wanderers side as we were accustomed to 4 or 5 years ago. And it's no real surprise that we beat them. I mean, as you say, the games before that, you know, they'd lost to Hull City, lost to Nottingham Forest, draw with Rotherham. Yeah. And also getting beaten by Blackburn Rovers. Disheartening.
They were soft.
Really disheartening.
They were very soft. And, you know, I think what we said in our preview is that we was expecting a bit of physicality, and there was none of that. And, you know, I know you're up north right now, but what we associate with northern teams, not that they can't play good football or pretty football, but we associate these teams from working class towns and cities to be hard and physical.
Yeah, well, any team with David Buita leading the defence, you know, leading the team, should be hard and physical,
yeah,
shouldn't it?
No identity, mate. None of that identity from Bolton. You know, the people from Bolton, they look at their team, don't represent them.
Well, look, Donaldson, you know, they've got guys that, I mean, look at the strikers, right? Look at the strikers. You've got Donaldson in there, right? You've got Yannick Walsh as well, who, again, you know, isn't the smallest of guys. Christian Deutsch, right, who's pretty much the epitome of a lower league big striker. Who's supposed to be yeah, exactly. You know, he's on loan for Forest Green Rovers, right? But why aren't they being physical? Why aren't they using that? That's the thing. And against a team like Villa, against the Dean Smith team, I'm sorry, you're not going to outpass them. So you're going to have to put a little bit more into to try and rattle them. Shame, I guess. Because at the end of the day, if you've got Clayton Donaldson up front for you and you can't score against Villa, then you're obviously doing something wrong. Because my man Clayton over there, right, as many goals as he scored against us, I do love him. He scores against us every single time.
Oh, look, at least looks good. And Bolton didn't, and I was disappointed. I thought they put more of a fight and test Villa a bit more. And yeah, again, say what you want about off the line clearance. Again, what I'll come back with, it weren't ever going in with James Chester there. Doesn't matter. He was on it. If I was a Bolton fan, I'd feel incredibly disappointed in my team's performance, because it's not like Villa weren't there for the taking. I think if a team actually turned up and give him a game, it might have been different. But Bolton didn't actually give him a game, or attempt to give him a game, or attempt to put him off a game.
Well, this is it. Don't you think we needed that? As long as the team was going to come at us, we were gonna struggle. Don't you think we've basically needed this game where a team has just sat down and let us beat them?
Yeah, I really think so. And all in all, very happy with a 2-0 win there.
Yeah. Can't say anything more than that. Friday night fixtures, you know, they're always going to be a bit funny. There's always a bit of a weird feeling to them, isn't it? I mean, you were live at the you were there at the game, weren't you, James?
Yeah, and it was fun. Friday night games, I don't mind. We're not at home.
I was going to say, what's the atmosphere like on a Friday night game? I've never been to one.
The first Friday night game I ever went to was the first Premier League one, when Villa played Man U, when Sherwood was.
We the first one,
I believe, in its modern incarnation. Yeah, I think we were the first Friday night game, not the first actually scheduled one, because our match was actually moved because of I believe it was an EDL march in Manchester or Birmingham. It was Birmingham, sorry. So it was moved from the Saturday to Friday, and it was electric. And Championship games, 30,000 attendance. Sometimes the crowd needs a bit of motivation, and they did get on their feet, and they did have a good sing song once in a while. Some midweek games are hard, mate. I remember Sunderland last season; it was drawing. Villa were winning; it was just boring. But it was a bit different.
Yeah, so
Friday night is a bit different to Tuesday night, is what I'll say.
I struggle to get excited for Tuesday night games.
Yeah, Friday's a lot better.
Just because you know, you look at the fixture list, you see Aston Villa versus Rotherham, and then you see Juventus versus Real Madrid in the Champions League, and you're like, why? Okay, fair enough. I mean, that it's interesting, because I know they're slowly trying to bring Friday night games to the Premier League on a more sort of frequent basis. I suppose it's a good little start to a night, I guess, isn't it? I suppose the move is to go straight into town afterwards or something.
Yeah, I guess.
Up the snobs.
So that's what some people are doing. But the away fans have to trudge back home. So some win.
Oh,
some
yeah,
guys win, so. Some guys lose. So,
right. Yeah, an away Friday night would be grim.
But, speaking of Champions League, mate, once upon a time, Villa was seemingly set to hire Thierry Henry as manager, and he has not gotten off to a good start, or a start at all at Monaco. It's not seemed good.
Essentially, he's almost made the wrong choice, hasn't he? He's chosen the wrong club.
I think Villa have won here, and that's not to say that Henry couldn't do a job at Villa. Pretty sure he could, but I'm really happy with Dean Smith, and I couldn't imagine us picking Smith over Henry.
Look, here's the thing, right? I'm very happy with Dean Smith. I'm very happy with him. And I think it would be wrong to come in to support anybody other than him now that, you know, he's in the role. If Thierry Henry was at Villa, I do believe that he'd be doing well. I'm not any less convinced about Thierry Henry's ability as a manager right now. But that Monaco side, I think what a lot of people are missing when it comes to this is that it was almost a bit of a poison chalice, because it's not about the fact that it's not about a team, you know, they're not a team who are sort of lacking in players or lacking in talent. It's almost a side which is lacking in motivation. You know, all the ingredients are there for the team to do well, but geez, you know what? The way that it's looking at the moment and you know the kind of results that they're getting, it just seems to me like they don't want to. They're not trying. I think that's the issue they've got at the moment. They've not got a group of players that want to win.
Yeah, very frustrating. You know, if you're a fan and you're watching that game, you know, Monaco, you want Henry to do the best because he's a former Monaco man. And of course, Monaco, the name, connotates so much F1. Or riches, glamour, success, and they ain't getting that. They're trudging along and they're looking poor. And you know, I'm not saying it's going to be a relegation battle for them this early on in the season, but it's just looking so dire. And it doesn't look like there's anyone there who can light a spark. And you thought Henry would come in and light the spark, but he just seems so frustrated and, you know, overwhelmed, I'd say, by the task on his hands, because it's a massive task. It's bigger than Villa. It's a bigger task than Villa.
It's huge. How do you motivate the guy, you know, guys like Yuri Tielemans, or I'd say most importantly for Falcao to like go in and do a good job?
You got the best players, you know, in the world.
Well, I mean, the thing is that they lost so many of their big players as well in the summer, though. Lamar, Fabinho, Moutinho. So I think there is that there is always going to be that slight discomfort within the squad, because Monaco have always been a selling team. The amount of look, you've seen it with Villa. You know, we've always had players leave, like top players leave, and then you bring in a load of other equally talented players, right? And you know, let's not forget, you know, the times where we've almost had an exodus where like the likes of Downing have left and we've replaced them with like Charles and Zogbia, somebody equally as talented, really, when you think about it. And then, you know, we've also had times where you've brought in the likes of Idrissa Gueye, Jordan Veretout, you know, very talented players. But when you lose that amount of players, the squad's going to be sitting there thinking, well, hang on a minute, like, you know, these are our teammates. it's going to change. It's going to change the atmosphere. It's going to change the mood. You know, that losing teammates isn't an easy thing, is it? I know all clubs deal with it, but when you take the spine out of a team, you almost have to start all over again. And I think Monaco are finally feeling the pain of that now.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think it's a tough time for them. Big job, and I think it was the right thing for Henry to do to take the job at Monaco, because it's a club close to his heart. It's in, you know, close to his native homeland of France. Shame it hasn't worked out, and I do hope it works out for him. But it appears that the best choice has been made for Villa, and I do hope it works out for Henry. And I can't be happier with what's worked out at Villa that Dean Smith's our manager, because it seems like we're on the up and up and on the right path. I'm not necessarily certain it's a bullet dodged at all. But I think we've landed it on our feet with the best case scenario. I'm happy with that.
Yeah, that's it. I just got to say basically that, you know, Henry effectively took a very high pressure job at Monaco, one that anybody was going to struggle with. Jardim's no, like, you know, he's no Muppet, is he? You know, he's a good manager. So yeah.
Yeah, and Villa's path continues, mate, this weekend as they take on quote-unquote Frank Lampard's Derby County, and that's away at Pride Park on Saturday, 3 p.m. So back to usual for Villa. We've had midweek games and Friday night games for the last 2 or 3 weeks now, so it's good to get back to Saturday, good to get back to your regularly scheduled football. Away at Derby, high-flying Derby. Little Chelsea, Mason Mount among their loanees, and he's really killing it in this league. He's doing very well under Lampard, and Derby themselves are doing very well. They've got a bit more about them than under Gary Rowett, and it really does seem that Frank Lampard is cut out to be a manager, because his Derby County side are working very well with that football.
I can't be asked for the John Terry versus Frank Lampard articles
narrative
which we're going to see this week. I cannot be asked. But let's back to the point. Okay, so yeah, Frank Lampard's done a fantastic job at Derby. He has done a fantastic job there. You know, they're a pretty high possession team. To be fair to them, they're scoring goals, which is what you want to see from them, obviously. But you know, also, you know, they're very adept at creating chances, and I think that's the main thing. You know, this Derby side is very, very creative. They obviously beat Birmingham City in their last game, but I think what I was more impressed with was their performance against Chelsea. I think that they looked good. You know, they looked really good. They really did give Chelsea a game. Obviously, Mason Mount played against them as well. But that midfield is strong. That midfield that Frank Lampard has basically got playing for Derby is very strong. And I think it's also worth mentioning the fantastic performances that Craig Forsyth has been putting in at left back. Somehow or another, as he's managed to get 4 assists this season. But yeah, that Derby side, they play good football. They gave Chelsea a game right up until the end. Yeah, don't think there's any more to say really than they're a very talented side.
Well, on terms of Villa, Jack Grealish has got to be careful because a booking for him means he will miss the Birmingham City match. Of course, you pick up the 5 or 4 yellow cards, you do miss a game, and that will happen if Jack Grealish manages to go into the referee's book against Derby County. So he's got to keep a lid on it, really, and keep himself together and not enter or pick up a yellow card, because that will mean he'll miss the biggest game of the season for him, and thus against Birmingham City later on in November. Berkir Bjarnason might not be fit, but I don't know if that matters too much for Villa, who we're doing well with Hourihan and McGinn. They're doing quite well. Not against rotation at all, mate, but Conor Hourihan's worth keeping in the side just for his foot. You know, set-piece delivery.
I'm worried that, like, Glenn Whelan is the exact type of player that wouldn't perform against Derby. I don't have a problem with him.
Yeah, he's kicked on lately, but I do get what you mean.
He's exactly the type of player that's going to get sort of like run ragged by the likes of Mason Mount, you know, Tom Huddleston, and even, you know, Harry Wilson, who's been playing in that defense, so in that midfield, sorry, which does worry me. So I think almost like going in a midfield 3 would really make that difficult. But equally, like, I don't know if we want to be playing with Jack Grealish behind the striker, because that Derby midfield will actually walk over us if we're not careful.
There's plenty to be concerned
about. Play 5 midfield.
Former Brentford man, Florian Joseph Zoon. Of course, we've got the might of Joe Ledley in midfield, Mason Bennett on the wings, Martin Waghorn thereabouts, Jack Marriott, former Peterborough man, who we know because he scored.
Great player, man.
Great, fantastic player. Tom Lawrence, another fantastic player. Harry Wilson, another fantastic player. And Mason Mount. These players are scoring goals. And these players are the attacking players.
And also, let's not also forget young Tom Lawrence, who's been putting in fantastic performances as well. The young Welsh midfielder.
Yeah, another name you might remember. A few names you might remember, mate. Scott Carson. And Curtis Davies?
Yep.
Of course.
Yep, yep. Scott Carson.
Scott Carson in goal for Derby. We had him on loan back in the day when his career was on the up and up. And it looks like he's aged like a fine wine, to be honest.
Great.
Because he's been doing, doing well for a few seasons for Derby.
Yeah, because Lord help him back in the day.
Yeah, he did well at Villa. It was just after Villa. Yeah, everything after.
I didn't think he did well at Villa. he wasn't great at Villa. It was around about the same time as well that he had the whole England
debacle.
You think Steve McLaren, you think Scott Carson, basically.
Curtis Davis, of course, another player. You know, someone who's sort of aging like a fine wine. He seems to have gotten a little bit better since he wasn't great either at Villa, was he?
I don't remember. Who, sorry?
Curtis Davis.
He was okay.
I think he's found his level. He's definitely better now than he was.
But even at Villa, though, he was good. I think there was just... I think we had all sorts of issues in defence around then. You know, he was playing at around about the same time when essentially all our best players were leaving.
Yeah.
And he was also the victim of... not being incredibly favoured by Martin O'Neill. Because I remember him
partying. Partying as well. I think
yeah, he did.
Against Arsenal 2008. went down, because I remember that, because I really wanted to see him. Because he was my favourite Villa player for ages for some reason. I think it's because he bibbed his car at us, me and my mates, back in the day when we were playing.
Oh, yeah. Really?
He hung out the window and waved at us. That was tight. Wow. It seems like that was yesterday. It's 10 or so years ago. Wow. Yeah.
Do you remember Curtis Davis doing an interview in his car after Martin O'Neill had left and basically like saying he was happy?
Yeah, I sort of remember.
Yeah.
But no, I think Derby seem to be fairly worried about. I think it's right to say that they're strong and can cause Villa some damage, mate.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Absolutely. I think Derby are one of the strongest teams in the Championship at the moment. Definitely one of the informed teams. So I think we do need to be careful. I mean, sort of as I was saying, you know, I have a little bit of a trouble in my mind, you know, to think whether or not we should go 4-2-3-1 or whether we should try and pack the midfield a little bit against them. But I would say that the most sensible thing to do is to basically attack them, really. Just give it a go, because if we lose, we lose. I think that's basically the attitude that we're probably going to see from Dean Smith from now on. And I do hope that we can do something against them. I don't know who I would have on the wings. At this point, I'm not incredibly convinced by Yannick Bolasie, but he hasn't really had many starts yet. Mm. I don't even know if he's had a start yet. So I would be tempted. But I also want to ask the question one more time, because I do think he would be perfect to fit in against Derby County. Where is Ahmed Alghazi? Anwar Alghazi, should I say.
And Yannick Bolasie as well. These players really need to be pushing for starts, because Villa are playing hot hand, really, and they're giving it to the correct people, playing Kodra and Adomra out wide, because these are the players that seem to be trying to perform. And Bolasie's getting there. He seems to be growing back into the side. Alghazi, though, no clue.
Do you know what? He did the silly Twitter move, didn't he?
I don't know. Why did he do that? Silly at the time. I don't see if it's that silly, but you would just keep your mouth shut, wouldn't you?
It's pretty silly, man.
You just say,
like, these things are taken quite seriously by teams.
Yeah,
you know, because it sets a really bad example. If a player like that, if I'm managing, or if I'm a coach at a club, and I see a player do that, go and basically disrespect the club on Twitter or disrespect the management.
Yeah,
then. It looks really, I mean, whether it, I can't remember if it was Steve Bruce or Dean Smith, but even if it was Steve Bruce, it sets a really bad example to not punish that player, doesn't it? To just allow it sets a really bad example. So I absolutely get that if that's the reason he's not playing, I absolutely get that. Obviously, it needs to be solved at some point, but yeah.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on there, because he should be pressing for a start on the team, but it's not happening. And he's not there, and it looks like Yannick Bolasie and Jonathan Kodra will be pushing for that. And even Ahmed Al-Mohammadi, someone we not mentioned, the bloke's got 4 assists and 2 goals.
He's been great, but also I don't want him playing on the wing, because we need him as an option at the back.
Yeah, that's fair to say, but he's putting the numbers up. And apart from Bolasie's 2 cameo goals, earned in 176 minutes of action, is nothing, you know, barely 2 games of action at the end of matches. No one, you know, the wingers need to start bagging their goals.
And yeah,
absolutely. I feel like that's, we should be moaning about fullbacks, but it's the wingers, I feel, they need to be stepping up. Jonathan Kodja looked good last game, I'll say that, but whether that's sustainable or whether he wants to be played up front, that's another question.
Played on the left, didn't he? Yeah.
Yeah.
You're at the game, right? Obviously, you notice these things more than somebody who's watching it on TV. Tracking back, what's the situation on that with Jonathan Kodja?
I'd love to say that I paid attention that much to his tracking back, but
obviously, you don't have an analyst's mind.
But no, it's not like Villa were gaping there.
I'm joking.
It's not like the Bolton were attacking that space anyway. He was there when needed, and he did drop back. It's not like he just stayed up on the left in the left-hand corner of the pitch. No, he did trace back and follow his man quite well and swap around with Abraham and Adoma quite well. I think it was necessary. Adoma swapped around with Abraham. They were all kind of linking up and covering for each other. And I thought that was nice to see. And Kodja's growing there, so long may it continue. But these players, if you're playing out on the wing, you need to start adding to your tallies, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
We moan about Alan Hutton and Neil Taylor, but in front of them, is any damage actually happening to the other team? Are we storming them with our wingers? And I don't really think that's the case.
Well, I watch us, you know, a lot. And to be honest with you, you might laugh, but it almost seems like most of our damage on the right-hand side comes from Alan Hutton.
Genuinely. I'm not going to laugh. I think...
Because we play quite narrow anyway, don't we?
The ability is beyond him. But he'll cut in. I think we want to stay wide. What we're trying to do is stretch the pitch to stay wide, and he'll cut in anyway, being him. But he'll cut in and seemingly do some damage, but there's no end product there. Nothing ever happens. But these are the things our wingers should be looking to do. And they ain't.
Yeah.
And if we want to beat teams like Derby, people like Kodja, Bolasie, Alghazi, and Adoma are going to have to step up, because it can't just be Tammy Abraham up front. It has to be, he's got two partners up front, and they're on either side of him on the wing, and they've got to start delivering. And I think Kodja's getting there. I really think he is. I think he did, had a fantastic game against Bolton. But it can't just be Tammy Abraham up front, and that's the key, I think, to beating Derby.
I agree, man.
So,
having said that, oh, we're both going to ask each other the same question.
What's your prediction?
My prediction?
Yes.
So usually, you know, I used to do these predictions and kind of always go with the positive one. But now that Trevor Hood is obviously, you know, making us take this seriously, I think Derby are going to win.
I think Derby are going to win.
I don't mean to upset Villa fans. Sorry. But it's just that midfield is just too good. And having said that, if Villa go and beat them, then great, you know, laugh in my face. But I'm going to say 2-0 Derby.
I was going to say 2-1 Derby.
Okay, fair.
Yeah, we've...
Interesting, James. Why do you think they're going to lose?
I think Villa are going to lose, and it's not that Villa are bad. I think you go into Derby. Derby are a good team under a good manager.
In form.
Playing well, and yes, in form. And now that it's in their house, mate, you've got to do something special to beat that team. Or you've got to rely on that team not showing up, which can happen. Or you've got to do something special to beat that team on their own turf when they have the right to play their own game of football. And can Villa, do Villa have the authority to do that right now? I don't think so. And that's not me pointing fingers at Dean Smith or saying that we're weak or don't have that, you know, influence on a game. But it's hard for me to see all the pieces coming together for Villa, because everything has to go right for Villa to win this.
No, absolutely.
That's not to say that Derby aren't unbeatable, and that, you know, it's like Leeds, they aren't the greatest gifted championship. That's Reading. That was Reading in 2007 when they got over 100 points. That was the greatest gift to the championship.
It's funny, isn't it? Because Reading never were a great Premier League side.
And you know, you can say Wolves and Fulham were gifts to the championship last season. Leeds and Derby aren't the greatest gifts to the championship, because they will get beat and they will get turned over. But teams will have to be at their best when Leeds and Derby are at their best. So for Villa to be at their best, they're going to have to... It's not just about Villa being at their best, though. It's about every single thing going right. No mistakes at the back. Total and utter cohesion up front. And damaging up front. And does that happen for Villa? Do we get that luck? Because we have to be lucky as well. Our shots have to go in and theirs don't. That's luck.
Yeah.
More often than not, that's luck. So, are Villa a lucky side? They're not a lucky side. Are Villa in form? I wouldn't say they're in top form. Does everything go right for Villa? I wouldn't say that. So, this is going to have to be a first if Villa want to win. It's going to have to be one of the first matches in a long time where Villa have to steal something. And that's not me bigging up Derby massively. It's just doubting everything going right for Villa. And then, hey, Dean Smith, I think we've got the right man in charge. I think we've got the right players and the best squad. But every single thing has to go right, and it doesn't usually happen for Villa.
Well, does it? Maybe it changes under Dean Smith. Maybe it changes under him. But it's more important for me to win this predictions league. So I'm gonna be realistic.
No, 2-0, 2-1. I think it's realistic, mate. Do you think Villa are not scoring then?
No, I don't. Honestly, I don't. Again, it's not a criticism on our attack, but I feel like, you know, the fact that we failed to integrate our best winger into the team, in Yannick Bolasie, I think that is a real crime, because I think Tammy Abraham does at times look like he's a little bit isolated. I know sometimes it's some of his own work that gets him there, but it's just one of those things. And also the other thing with Derby is that their defense has been really good this season. As you say, Curtis Davis, he's been having, you know, a fantastic season. And on top of that, the fact they have an absolute linchpin in Tom Huddleston, and then they've got the energy of Mason Mount in midfield. I think that's what makes me think we're going to struggle just a little bit. It's the energy more than anything that I'm expecting from Derby County to win the game.
Yeah, I really think they're doing well, and they'll continue to do well, and they'll ride that form. And whether Villa can upset them, I think that's up to Aston Villa's 11 players on the day. So we'll see that. We'll see what happens there on Saturday. But I guess sign off for us, mate. Any final thoughts going into this Derby game?
Just want to say, first of all, a big welcome to new goalkeeping coach at Aston Villa, Neil Cutler. The club have put up an interview with him on YouTube. He's basically another one of the coaches who has worked alongside Dean Smith, and he is now coaching the goalkeepers at Villa. So hopefully we'll start seeing some better performances from Nyland, who has been improving since he's come here. So, yeah.
Well, fingers crossed. Let's see what Villa can do. Happy Diwali, by the way, to everyone listening, if you celebrate that festival or not. The fireworks are certainly going off. The Festival of Light starts. So if you're celebrating, happy Diwali. And we'll see you after Villa, hopefully, beat Derby County this weekend. Catch you soon, guys. Goodbye.